Waiting for your sign? Here it is. Shop Labor Day appliance deals at Lowe's before they're gone. Get up to 45% off select major appliances. Plus, get free delivery, haul away, installation and parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan on purchases of $999 or more. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/16 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Oh, here we are. We are coming to you in between those moments of closing arguments and then a jury coming back with their decision. That's where we sit as we do this episode today. We're going to be discussing where everything has landed in the Lindsey Clancy trial, from the prosecution to the defense. Bob Mata, supposedly going to be joining us here very shortly. We're patiently awaiting Mr. Mata. Bob! Bob! We're just going to keep shouting Bob until he shows up. Robin Drake is, of course, with me, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program.
Playing the role of defense attorney today.
And so get out your Sharpie. And
That's why I got my Bob mustache right here.
Yeah, there we go. Bob, do a Bob stash. Have a Bob stash on when Bob's late. But here we are. We can certainly discuss where we think this has landed. The prosecution laid out their case. Lindsey Clancy's jury started deliberating today after 5 weeks of testimony and over 80 witnesses. Where does it go from here? We're going to start with the prosecution, although I know the order in which the closing arguments were made happened in the opposite direction. Yep. But let's start there. There was fire with Reddington, and we're going to get to Reddington.
Yep.
I feel that when we had the prosecution giving theirs, I wasn't quite feeling fire. I wasn't even quite really feeling like Bunsen burner. I was like kind of like those hand warmers you put in your pocket. Like, that's the amount of heat I was feeling in terms of passion for what they were delivering. What's your take, Robin?
Yeah, and it's It's fun, Tony, because we were texting back and forth as we were both watching both closing by Reddington as well as in the prosecution. And for the audience that is, follows us from the beginning of this and always, you know, the majority of us on the show, we're leaning towards Lindsay's not being guilty by reason of insanity or criminally responsible because of the preponderance of what we saw from our optic and lens, but at the same time, being very open to everything we see and critically thinking through it. And so, and we'll get to Reddington next, but I'm with you. It was a very lackluster on the emotional side, as I saw it from the prosecution standpoint. I thought it was it lacked conviction comparatively, and I think that's the key point on this one, because if you looked at the substance of what they were saying, and I was really trying hard to look at it the best I could, and that's why Bob, when he gets here, will be great, because he was in the courtroom for all of this.
It says he's on his way.
Good. You know, so sitting there and listening to the content, I thought they delivered accurately from their context and point of view, highlighting their people about why they think she's guilty. And from there, I set up Bob. There's the Bob. Bob, I was channeling my inner Bob, man.
We're talking about the prosecution, how it landed. We're going to get to Reddington next, but we're going to start with the prosecution end of things. I had said, you know, Reddington came in, you know, with fire. I felt like the heat from the prosecution felt kind of like those hand warmers you get when you go to a game. It's like, they keep you a bit warm, but they certainly as hell aren't fire like Reddington. Bob, what was your just general take there, being in that courtroom with the closings from the prosecution first? We don't have Bob
sound,
audio. Bob.
Turn on your sound, Bob.
Sorry, I'm not an optimal setup, boy. So
that looks great. Look at you.
Starlink going. I'm sitting in the back of a Denali, and it is what it is.
Here we go.
You've only been there for 5 weeks, Bob. It's all right. Suck it up.
I'm in the van down by the river.
Thank you, Bob. You're a rock star, man.
Man, I appreciate it. I'm ready to get home. Here's my honest take. And it was interesting because I spoke to a lot of people, a lot of the media that I'm sitting with, and I'm not obviously traditional media. So, you know, I was asking, well, what was your take of the closings? And I was surprised. A lot of them felt that the Commonwealth's closing was good, that they may have moved the needle in some respects. I mean, my biggest issues were that they still didn't pick a theory. Like, they start off.
Yeah, I agree.
Beginning the closing, and Sprague's like, well, you know, okay, I know that we were telling you that we didn't think it was a real suicide, but we think it was a legitimate suicide, you know, and I'm like, but then towards the end, she flips it back. You know, and she's like, well, you know, she's a nurse. She would know, you know, how to cut that. I'm like, what? Like, they just can't pick a theory. I don't know how that's affecting the jury. I don't know if the jury's been picking up on all these inconsistencies, you know, like, and she gets into the, you know, whether or not Pat said he had to untie the ligatures, you know, the exercise bands. And like, when that happened, like, a million people clipped that scene from his testimony, and he definitely said, I had to untie them, and I had a problem with some of them. I'm like, why is she lying? You know? And it's like, and again, I'm biased. I make no bones about it. Sure. I am 100% believing that Lindsay was psychotic.
Sure.
I believe that she was disassociated from her body. I believe that she heard this voice and she was not in her right mind, you know? So I'm like, and that's where I'm at. And I respect if people are like, no, I think she's full of it. It's everything the Commonwealth said, but that's not where I'm at. I think it was a very real thing for her. I think that she's in her own worst prison. So for me, I mean, it didn't move the needle at all in time. And, you know, even though going into it, I've basically 100% made up my mind of where I would vote if I were on the jury. You know, I still keep an open mind going into closings. Like, maybe they're gonna point out something. They're gonna argue something that I didn't think of, or put it in such a way where I'm like, huh, all right, well, that's interesting. And for me, that didn't happen. You know, with the prosecution.
Is that common to have a moving target like that, Bob? Because you're right. I was trying to figure out, because they were making points, and so there's two things in there. Are they? Is there any way you can actually object to when they actually lie in closing like that? And the second point is it typical for the prosecution or anyone on closing to, it's like she didn't have one scripted until she's actually watching a testimony. And I know you're building it throughout, but it's like from the start to the end, it became a moving target based on the testimony that her own people provided.
Yeah. I mean, Robin, that blew my mind. It blew my mind when the first expert, Heilbrunn, said this was a very serious suicide attempt. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, these women, like, it's not as if they didn't have their expert reports and know that their experts were going to get on the stand,
right?
Because they need it for their motive theory. These, both of those experts need it. Their theory being that Lindsay was going to kill herself. And her mindset, what her mindset was, is she did not want her children to suffer by the fact that she was gone. So mm-hmm. she was bringing them with her. That's their theory. In that theory, you have to have a legitimate attempt at suicide. Otherwise, their theory doesn't exist in reality. So, it's not common for a moving target. It's not how you want to go in.
The closing, I'm not just trying to pile on. I mean, I felt it was weak, but it felt kind of like a malingering conversation, semi-drunk as you're sobering up late night at the Perkins when you're 21 after you get out of a movie and somebody's trying to pitch you their version of the movie. But you're also kind of interjecting stuff, so then their opinion kind of keeps moving with it too. And the conversation of what they're originally pitching you, their concept of what happened in the movie, is kind of different by the end of the conversation than what it started. It was just like, what are we watching? And with not a lot of conviction either. where it's just like, I'm kind of going through the motions. I'm going to ask again, we've talked about this a few times already, Bob. It does happen. This is just pure conjecture, but do you suspect that the prosecutors weren't really all in this to win this mentally?
I can't discount it. You know, I mean, like when you kind of look at the rock road that they've taken in terms of getting all the way through this trial, and just with the inconsistencies in their theories and not really having anything lined up in terms of, this is what we believe happened, and this is why we believe it happened. It's been, like you said, it's been a moving target. They've been moving the goalposts like the entire time. And for me, you know, I understand. I say it all the time on our show. I'm like, they weren't there. The cops weren't there.
Yeah.
Reddington wasn't there. None of us were there. So everybody just needs to understand that when they're hearing attorneys in a trial speak in a matter-of-fact type sense, it's not a matter-of-fact. They've taken the evidence and they've crafted a theory, and it's nothing more than that. And that goes for both sides.
Sure.
That's not just the prosecutor. It's the defense, too. That's what I'm always saying. I mean, prosecutors, by the nature of their job, have to be myopic. They have to be tunnel-visioned. They can't be doing what they're doing. They're trying this case like it's a defense case. We're the ones who have to be objective and try to think of every other possibility of what might have happened here. That's what we do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're trying to get to reasonable doubt. And, you know, I mean, Diaz, the boss, who's the elected DA out here, he's the one who said we're going with it. And he's like, I'm assuming, said I want two women on it. And these two gals are the ones who got pulled out of the box, said you go with it. And they're both experienced.
It's not their first
rodeo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can't help but think, maybe their heart's not all the way in it.
They seem to understand it the way. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
What happens in that scenario, Bob? I mean, is it literally a name being pulled out of the box? I mean, what you're assigned the case. What if you are like morally opposed to what you're being said? This is what you're going to go argue. I mean, what do you do in that scenario?
To be honest with you, I can't give you a knowing answer to that because I've never been a prosecutor. You know, I often wonder that same thing. And I've asked prosecutor friends and I'm like, well, what happens if they slide like a pile of shit on your desk? Like, what is your ability to be able to tell your boss, nah, this ain't me. Like, do you have the ability to be able to do that? And the most recent conversation I had, and it was in relation to this case, they were like, not really. You know, it's like my option is to leave, to quit the job.
Yeah. I've had that. So inside the Bureau, I've actually had a friend of mine that was actually placed on, I won't call in the politics of it, but he was actually called because of my Russian background into an investigation. You can imagine what has taken place, you know, at the higher levels of government the last bunch of years. And we were both talking and said, dude, this is a minefield that you can't even avoid the mines. And this is no good for you. You got to get out. And he says, I can't get out of this because of all the politics involved. And it's a career ender. If you say no, you can't say no to bosses. But what he was able to do is he's actually to show the bias he had because of another area of his life and investigation that was enough to actually get himself recused from it. That was the only thing he was able to do that he actually got the Bureau wouldn't side with him. Yeah. He actually had the Department of Justice side with him that they can't include him in that. So it's a very tricky thing to be able to be recused from it because
it's like the very force that is behind like wanting to prosecute something. You're not going to put people on it that you know are going to be the worst for the job that don't want to do this. I mean, that's not going to win it. You got to find the right. But
they didn't.
I don't know
really
how the
understand.
Levers work on that. Yeah,
they didn't really understand what they were prosecuting. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, here's how I look at it. You know, if you're a prosecuting attorney in this case with this fact pattern, with the loss of three beautiful children at the hands of their mother, you know, you've got it. You've got the DA saying, "All right, well, look." This thing is, we've got to charge her with it, you know, like no matter what she says is going on. And so they move forward with it. But if you were, say you're a prosecutor and your brother has gone through psychosis and you're like, well, I actually have personal experience. I know this is real. You know what I mean? And like, I am in a position where you're asking me to essentially go in there and lie about what I know to be true in terms of that particular mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how do you do that? It's like you said, T, like, you got to go to your boss and be like, look, like my heart's not in it, you know? Yeah. And that's going to be evident when I'm out in front of that jury. They're going to sense it at some point, you know? It's like, I don't know that this is a fake it till you make it type situation of the length of the trial. You know, it's not like it's a 2-day trial. You can go in there. Yeah. You know, the jury's going to barely get to know you. You're in there for 5 weeks. They know you, you know, and you get to know the attorneys during that lengthy type of trial.
Yeah, day in, day out.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know that you'll be able to kind of sell that if you're really not all the way in with what you're trying to sell them, you know?
Yeah.
Like Reddington, you could see he's all in, right?
Yeah.
Like you could tell. He believes what he's saying.
He also did the deep dive to figure out what it all meant, too. You know, he for someone he said it to so many times, both outside of court and in court, you know, he didn't really know much about all this stuff until he did this. And you could see the depth of field he had, the expertise he had as he's doing his discussions ad hoc, off the cuff sometimes. I know everything gets rehearsed and everything. But when you compare the appearance of depth of field of what they were talking about to the prosecution side, it really looked like apples and oranges, especially because I posted it on in the comment section and see if I'm right on this from your take, Bob. You know, because people keep saying she's a monster just means locked away, that monster comment. And if you think deeply about it, I don't want to negate of what happened was monstrous. Yeah. I think the argument here, which is, all right, so either Lindsay's a monster or something inside her became a monster because of the psychotic break or not. You know, not criminally responsible, because there's a monster somewhere there. And I think that's where the argument is the defense is saying it's a psychotic break or something else, because it doesn't have to be psychotic break for not guilty by being mentally.
Lack of criminal, yeah.
Right, that one.
Yeah.
But I think that's the argument. And it seemed like the two prosecutors didn't quite understand what everyone else was saying on the other side. It's like totally dismissive of it. It's
did
like,
they?
That
I mean,
it
or is there,
exist.
Was there no lane for them to go in to understand it? Because it just, if they start understanding it, then their whole case goes up. Before we go to the defense, Bob, what do you think, what was the most impactful message or moment that the prosecution had in this case, if they had any? What stood to you? Bob, your mic's out again. No, I can't hear Bob. There we go.
Damn it. All right. Sorry.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. We're doing sign language.
That was the most insightful thing right there, Bob. Yeah. You missed it.
Ask it again real quick, T. I missed it. I was reading comments that Todd was throwing up, or one of you two guys throwing
okay,
up.
Okay. Yeah. Todd was throwing them up. So the prosecution, if you were to look back at this, best moment that they had, what landed the strongest for them at the end of the day?
Good question.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimately, probably the strongest moment for them is not necessarily based in evidence. I think their strongest moment has been that they have continually hammered the jury over the head with emotion about these children. I mean, you see it like you were asking that question and I was reading the chat that you put up and it's like, I'm not going to try to tell people how to feel. You know what I mean? Like people are feeling deeply that, you know, oh, the children are getting forgotten in this. And they're not by anybody that's following this case, not by anybody that's covering this case, not by anybody that knows anything about this case. No one's forgetting about the kids. But when you move into the legal process, the focus then shifts from what happened to the beautiful babies to why and can the mother be held criminally responsible? That's the entire focus.
Right.
And I just don't think that they did prove that the psychosis, which is their burden entirely, wasn't happening. Because I saw it in that comment, the first one that Todd put up, this misconception that the prosecutors keep putting out there that you cannot plan while you're in a state of psychosis is just patently wrong.
Well, their own experts were contradicting their own line of thinking. I mean, did they do more harm than good by putting the amount of experts that they put up there? Because one doesn't agree with the other, and then one has the, I mean, it's like they didn't check their notes before they said, yes, please come to the stand.
Mac. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like Mac. Yeah. Just move him aside.
God, what a disaster.
Oh, that was a disaster.
More than an embarrassment.
Oh, man.
Watching people end their careers during this is actually pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's not the first time we've seen it. And
my God.
Right, he got pulled down off of the websites for both Nemours and Philadelphia Children's. Yeah. Like he's not, if you Google him.
The total lack of self-awareness that some of these people had while they're testifying, they thought they weren't being watched or really regarded by anyone. They could just call it in, you know, because I'm so, yeah. I mean, he had the impression of, look, I'm so important. You're just going to listen to me because I say it. Look at me. And you're dude, you are way off.
Like you said, T, did they call too many? Because frankly, you know, you've got Heilbrunn saying, Resnick's kind of the man, you know, who is the defense's expert in terms of the criminal responsibility side of it. And he is the man. I mean, the guy's worked on every major case that you can think of from all types. You know, it was Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, Casey Anthony, everything and everything in between, school shootings, everything. Yeah. So, I mean, the guy, and he's done more filicide cases than anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
No, so you've got to give him weight in terms of what his opinion is. And then, you know, the problem for the Commonwealth witnesses is that they had zero experience aside from 25 years ago, 30 years ago during his residency when he dealt with a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Whatever he did.
I know. I was so like, again, like, why are they? I mean, why call half of these people at all is what I was wondering. It's like, it's because, again, can't get anybody.
Yeah.
So
just answered the question. That's exactly it. I mean, you have to believe the Commonwealth was searching high and low, number one, for a female expert who actually has some knowledge about postpartum depression. But I mean, maybe their thing is they're deniers that that's a real thing. As we all know at this point, it's not a standalone disorder in the DSM.
Yeah.
You know, postpartum depression, it does not exist in there. It's not in their Bible. And, you know, they may be of the mindset, look, we're not going to give that argument any oxygen. We're going to pretend like it doesn't exist, which is basically what they did.
Yeah, and it's another layer that you have to get the jury to understand that, yes, here's how the DSM handles it, but in Europe, you know, it's basically the, you know, the metric system versus, you know, standard. You know, it's like, it is far more recognized over here. Just because we're on a different continent doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But I mean, what, we live in a country where state by state, certain, you know, things are recognized as existing or not in the mental health world.
100%. So,
yeah, I want to address really quick the incredibly stupid, heartless comment that this person made on our feed about the three of us having losing our kids and standing by, you know, and watching it happen for 20 minutes. Yeah, that's the one. What a great comment you just made there. Because, you know, if you had actually listened to the testimony of everyone in his family that did lose the kids, who are they standing with? And you have no idea, each of us having kids, what we go through with our own kids. So why don't you take your mouth, close it, open your ears, and learn at least two more things today? That is the most insensitive bullshit thing I've actually seen on this show.
Get a Robin.
Boom. Drop the mic.
I'm in complete.
I stand with the family who did lose the kids. How about that one?
Yep.
That's okay. Well, I mean, she's going to go back and she's going to go feed a cat.
Sorry, I'm done.
No, who was the most compelling witness to you in terms of what that person had to have been thinking and what that person lost walking into that courtroom? Who do you guys think was the most compelling witness for the defense? And I know we haven't gotten to that yet, but like,
we'll go into it now. But yeah,
I got a lot of equals. Emotionally, right, or pragmatically? I got emotionally, right, and pragmatically. Yeah. I have two on that one.
Let's get your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube for the prosecution on how all of that landed. Let's go over to the defense. Reddington's defense never argued Lindsay didn't kill her children. It argued she couldn't have stopped herself, that the medications and the system that prescribed them broke her brain before she ever walked into that basement. And the case played out inside the courtroom and obviously has touched millions of people, judging by everyone's reactions. But how did the defense do with the jury at the end of the day? That's what we're breaking down. Defense attorney extraordinaire and host of Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, is with us from Massachusetts, where he's been in the courtroom every day. And Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. The defense... if you've been following Bob, you've seen the fanfare, because my God, it's all called for with Reddington. Holy crap. You said early on to me, I'd like in a text, it's like watching Matlock in real life or something of that nature. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, my God, this guy, this is how you do it. You were in the courtroom. Give me your thoughts on how he did with the jury. Obviously, we know how it read out here to a lot of people of a certain, you know, mindset on this. But how did it land in there? That's what really matters.
As always, with him in particular, I mean, they're paying rapt attention. You know, the guy can command a room.
Yeah.
He's a fabulous storyteller. You know, he's like, he's just got that gift of being able to have jurors want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not he's convincing all of them as to what he's saying is a different question altogether, but it's never a matter of like, this guy makes me want to fucking go to sleep. You know what I mean? It's like you're watching him. He's entertaining. He's passionate. He's knowledgeable about the facts of the case. Like, all those things exist when you're watching him. And, you know, I thought his closing was powerful. You know, it was a little, if I were to give a critique, it was a little scattershot. You know, he would kind of bounce around.
Yeah, that's what Todd was saying too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but look, I too am a guy who does not read from a script when I'm doing a closing. You know, and what happens when you're giving a lengthy closing is shit pops into your head as you're speaking, right? So,
yeah,
you know, and it's not winging it. because he's been thinking about this closing forever. Yeah. But, you know, the first rule that my father gave me, who was a defense attorney, trial attorney, is like never read from a piece of paper at trial, ever. You know, so I've taken that and lived by that my entire life in terms of practicing law. And Ruddington is an old school guy who lives and dies by that. And so, you know, he had his concepts, his overarching concepts. He had the five or six things that he wanted to hit specifically in terms of contradictions that were made by Commonwealth during their case. Obviously, the bands, the exercise bands not being knotted, you know, all the different things that he felt that they were disingenuous about, that they were trying to manipulate the jury about. He really kind of focused on that, focused less on the experts and, mm-hmm. and the criminal responsibility in terms of kind of arguing that to the jury, you know, and it's easy to sit here and armchair quarterback, you know, would if I had been able to have an earpiece in his ear and a little microphone sitting in a back room, I would have been like, hey man, this is the time you gotta drive home the concept of psychosis and don't be married to just postpartum psychosis. Right. Allow for the jury to think about psychosis that was brought on maybe by the medications, that was a combination of the fact that she had stopped breastfeeding in October, that she's on this, you know, polypharmaceutical cocktail for 4 months. You know, was her brain fried early on from the Zoloft? Leave yourself the ability to be able to give the jury multiple things to hang their hat on in terms of the mental illness. Because one thing that was taken off the table by the prosecutors in their opening and, well, not by their opening, but in their closing was the fact that there's no dispute that she had a mental disease or defect.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We all are in agreement with that.
Yep.
What we're suggesting is she was bipolar too, that she was well within her faculties, that the evidence that we have in terms of the Google searching and, you know, the planning, that just shows us that she knew right from wrong, that the planning in and of itself was to evade getting caught, not by the law enforcement initially, but by her husband. So they're dying on that hill. I thought Red addressed it somewhat, because that can play both ways. But it was almost a little bit like an afterthought, wherein kind of mid-closing argument, Ruddington says, you know, in the Google searches, you know, she's not trying to find out how long he's going to be gone because she wants him away. She's trying to Google how long he's going to be gone for how quickly he's going to get back.
I thought that was really good.
Which is the counter argument, right?
Yeah. And Bob, so my question on that, Bob, I just finished up your amazing series on Buried on the Gacy trial, and I listened to your dad's opening statement, which highlights this so articulately. And that's where my question comes from, where what you're both doing in the opening, but even more so in the closing, is you're reminding the jury that this is not an emotional case. You have to weigh the facts, data, and details. And when, just as you presented there, you saw a bit of a dichotomy between the prosecution and then the defense, because Reddington clearly, whether by intention or not, he's an emotional guy about this. And so he was evoking emotion. I mean, I got teary-eyed listening to him pulling up the photos of the kids. But you're in the courtroom watching the jury. Did you think that would land better than a more pragmatic approach to it? Or do you think that was effective for him? Oh, we lost Bob. That was a good question.
That was a good question.
I couldn't repeat it. Well, Tony, I'll ask you the same thing. You watched it too. And that's the way Bob's dad laid it out, is when you're doing the closing, and Bob just laid it out, when you're doing the closing and the opening, you want to remind the jury that these decisions are not made emotionally. They're based on the facts, data, and details, and the evidence as presented by the court, during the court, by the prosecution and the defense. And to not put your emotion into it, yet clearly Reddington was very emotional all throughout this, because he's so vested so totally in Lindsay and what she went through, and it came through in the defense, you know, in his final closing. I thought it was compelling, but is that compelling for us, the audience, good? But when the jury gets their instructions and told not to listen or pay attention to that, my question is, what do you think the jury saw and how do you think it'll resonate?
I mean, the jury gets instructions, but everybody's human. You know, there's nobody's going to dehumanize anyone through instruction. And the more human
Andy's back.
Anyone can be, I think, in that sort of a setting and making a true emotional connection with a juror, you know, the more impactful they're going to be, even if, you know, that those elements, you know, are supposed to be kind of stripped out of it. Okay, Bob,
did you hear what
turn.
I said, Bob?
No. When it turns off, it turns off the Skylink. No Wi-Fi.
Yes, no one will. So I could summarize the question really quick. So your dad taught us very well in the Gacy Files. I listened to his opening statement because, you know, you didn't do his closing, you did the closing of the prosecution. Great, great, instructive series to watch on his podcast, Buried. And Buried. So I know, and you just went through it, the jury's instructed to not bring emotions into it. Watch, you know, pay attention to data, details, the evidence as presented, and make your assessment based on that. And Reddington was very clearly much more passionate about what he was doing. And the prosecution's delivery and closing, even though it was like a myriad of fishing expeditions, it looked like, then they followed their own testimony from their own people without actually coming up with supporting their original theory, I should say. So how do you think, because you were in the courtroom watching, how do you think it landed with this jury? Because every jury's got a different vibe to them, I'll say.
It's really hard to tell. So let me give you the breakdown. So they selected, it's ultimately they landed, which I'm sure you guys have run into this info, but it's 9 women, 3 men were picked out of the 18 as the deliberating jurors. The 2 youngest female jurors, who I was guessing were late 20s to mid 30s, were not included. So they didn't make it onto the jury, which I don't, that's a tough one for me because I, like, again, you know, you have to look at social media. As much as we may disagree with some folks in chat,
sure,
they have a right to their opinion, you know, and there's going to be people on that jury that share the opinion. There is not a chance in hell that they got 18 people who none of which are of the mindset, I don't really care if she was psychotic.
Yeah.
I don't really care if she had a mental defect or disease. Yeah. She killed her kids. In this country, when you kill your children, you go to prison. And right. If it was available, we'd execute her. You know what I mean? Like, those people are going to exist on the jury. So in terms of whether or not Red's able to swing them, I'm going to guess no. You know, it's like, have you
and
ever,
that's, yeah, that's where we end up hung.
Ever changed anybody's mind online ever.
No.
When you're dug you're dug in.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I'm pulling this up because I was texting yesterday with Coffendaffer because I said, can I move you to Monday so we can get you in here, Bob, today from Massachusetts? So she
I've been missing you guys, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
well, we've been following you. We've been watching you in court every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said, you know, I think everybody's mad at me anyway. And I said, you know, I think it's you know, because we have differing opinions on this, very differing opinions.
Yeah.
But, and I said, you know, but I think it's, you know, I said, where do you think it is divided right now? Like 50-50? And she said, I'll do a poll. So here's the poll that where it sits right now, over 2,000 votes. And this is on Koff's Facebook.
With her followers.
Yes, with her followers.
Right.
But there's plenty of people on Koff's Facebook that don't like her.
We like to call them hate watchers.
Yeah. I want to say, I mean, honestly, I think it's a kind of a fairly balanced group, honestly, of like and dislike of her opinion on her Twitter. Do you believe Lindsay had a psychotic break? 37% yes, 52% no, 2% I don't follow. But here's where you're talking about, Bob. I don't think it matters, 9%.
Right.
And that's where I think this lives, is right there. I don't think it matters. Because we can debate all of it, you know, and there's plenty of people who can understand the psychology of it and still be like, I don't care. I don't care.
It's as simple as that, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the scene from, you know, Good Will Hunting. You know, he's sitting in court. He's like, and the judge is like, you hit a cop, you're going in. You know, here people are going to be saying, look, I don't give a shit what was going on with
her.
She killed her own children, you know, and like in the most personal way possible.
And I understand.
You know, in terms of strangling. And I get it. I understand it. I can see that people that feel so adamantly about that, that are of the mindset that there's, it doesn't matter if, because it's really a fundamental way of thinking about it in terms of, all right, as a society, are we going to get to the point where we acknowledge that there are situations with mental illness wherein people literally do not have control over their mind and or their faculties? And if we can get the majority of the country, because that's a fact, that's a real thing, that is not up for debate. So the debate then switches to, what are we going to do with it? Can we, as a society, give people a pass, even though that's not what's happening here?
Right.
Lindsay Clancy, if she's found not guilty by way of lack of criminal responsibility, isn't getting a pass. She's going to be institutionalized. Do I think that there could be a day 20 years down the road where she does not want to end her own life? Maybe. But she's not there now. We know. And it's 3.5 years after the fact. They have her on one-on-one. There is somebody watching her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because she is a threat to kill herself. So, you know, I mean, and that's part of it. If she's found not guilty, she's not rolling out of the courtroom. You know what I mean? She's just not. She's going to be in a hospital. And, you know, like, and Sue, I hear you. Throw her in Gen Pop. And I hear everybody that's saying that. But, like, that's just, you're electing to ignore a problem that is running rampant in this country, which is mental illness. If you can't be online, and I'm talking about on your socials, scrolling through your reels or your TikToks or whatever the, you know, your choice of social media platform is, and you just watch insane shit after insane shit after from all corners of the country, and there's no shortage of it, our country is teeming with mental illness. Teeming with it. And if we don't get in front of it and acknowledge that this is a real fucking problem and we need to figure out how to handle it in a way that's going to allow us to continue as a functioning society, then we're doomed. These things, I don't know what's causing it. I can't imagine the amount of invisible shit rays, whether it's sound waves, well, all the shit. I once saw a photograph of where, like, and I don't know what they were able to use to actually capture the invisible shit that we walk through in an urban area. And it looks like those laser traps or laser things that they have to guard fucking priceless art. You know what?
It's like the spectrum. You know, you can see the spectrum of all of the.
I don't know what's causing it. I really don't know what's causing it, but it's right there for all of us to see with our own eyes.
Yeah,
and it's not getting better, and you know, and that's without even bringing the conversation to what this is really germane about in this trial, which is the concept that there's a document or a book rather that is considered to be a Bible for psychiatrists and psychologists in terms of trying to diagnose what type of disorder somebody has. And they're ignoring completely ignoring as a standalone the concept of postpartum depression, which is different than regular depression because you're talking about massive hormonal swings. Yeah. You know, it's a
but only if it's 4 weeks, Bob. It's only got to be 4 weeks. If it's outside four weeks, it's not in DSM. It's not counted. Because people can't hold two truths at the same time. That's why I think a lot of people are having a hard time with two, because you can't hold one truth of her killing her kids, which is a hardcore truth. No one's denying that. Yeah. And the truth that she had something seriously mental wrong with her that caused her to do that. Because I know that some of the people in here, the fear is if we let this one go, the floodgates are open, man. That's it's chaos and mayhem.
I tell you what, they're already open, kids. They're already open.
Oh, yeah.
It's time that we get in front of it and stop pretending that we're shocked every time horrible things go down. It's like, yeah, and here's how we got here. Let's get in front of that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation. The jury is deliberating as of right now, as of our recording of this. But outside the Plymouth courtroom, the Lindsay Clancy case has become something bigger than a verdict, a conspiracy factory, a cultural flashpoint, and a set of questions about what happens next that nobody in the courtroom can actually answer. Your thoughts in the comments as we roll through this. Online, thousands of people are accusing Patrick Clancy of murdering his children. Yeah. I was not expecting this one when we began covering this case. There's content creators building audiences on the theory. This is despite surveillance footage placing him outside the home, Lindsay's own admission that she did it, the whole defense, everything. I mean, it's based on fantasy, but it's big and it's out there. Joining us to discuss the conspiracy world and where this all goes after this, Bob Mata, defense attorney. He's been in the courtroom every single day, host of Defense Diaries. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. Bob, just for the record for everybody, you watched him testify. Is there anything that supports anything these people are saying?
No, it's
there
absurd.
We go.
The woman told everybody that she spoke to that she did it. Like, I don't know. Like this concept that somehow Pat Clancy came up with some kind of pharmaceutical amnesia, like cocktail for her that she doesn't remember, and then he fed her the story, like thinking she was going to be dead. It's fucking ridiculous.
He'd be like Batman too. Like, I mean, the way he'd have to like kind of like cannot like make this all work and like sneak into
Alfred.
Situations. It's like it'd be insane. It's insane.
There's not
Alfred
one behavior
did all
with
the heavy
with,
lifting for Batman. Yeah, Alfred was in the background inventing all the shit. Pat Clancy doesn't have Alfred.
And also his behavior, I mean, from the 911 call, which is completely incongruent with someone even contemplating the idea of being the perpetrator. That's one thing. His testimony on her behalf is incongruent with the fact that he would have done it. Her behavior just completely collapsing doesn't have any shred of doubt in her own head that she did it, because what you're seeing her doing when she's completely collapsing in the courtroom every time it's brought up is her collapsing and devastated because she's very aware that she did it, so it all these, and that's just the facts of what we see before our eyes, let alone all the evidence. But these same people, I'd be very curious, we should take a poll if they think we never landed on the moon and the earth is fucking flat.
Guaranteed.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of triggering characters out there for a lot of people. A lot of them you can identify and go, oh, this is kind of a triggering type character. I didn't see Patrick Clancy being one, honestly.
You know what?
It's like boring. It's kind of like...
Here's what I've come up with in terms of trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with these people. And I'm talking about the Clancy, Patrick Clancy guilters. They're trying to rationalize a completely irrational concept for all of us, which is that a mother would do this to her own children.
Yeah.
It is way, way easier for people to come to the conclusion that it's the husband. It's that fucking guy. The dad, look, he's got a new wife. You know, like he's married. She's either pregnant or they have a kid, whatever the case may be. You know, they start digging into it. It's way easier to have the Scott Petersons of the world, the Chris Watts of the world, because it's easier to wrap your mind around that concept than it is to think in any world that a mother would do this to her children.
Especially when you see her in the courtroom and you see when you see her and witness her and you hear all the testimony between friends, family, coworkers of what a perfect human being and mother she was until this horrendous day, and you want to have a monster and you don't want to accept the fact that mental illness could have been at the core of this, you have to blame a monster someplace. So they found one.
I mean, it's almost like Mad Libs.
Invented one.
Like we didn't have these, because in so many cases we cover, all of those elements exist. There's the motive. There's the lover on the outside. There's the bullshit here. There's this over here. This didn't have any of that. So what happened is the audience filled in those blanks with villains and concepts and constructs that don't even exist.
We are story makers as a species.
That's interesting. I mean, I can't think of another case where, like, can you, Bob, recently, where it gets this, like, just completely inventive material, like, other story? I mean, is this new? Is this part of social media and the way we communicate? Is this going to be just kind of how it goes going forward on so many cases where, when reality is too hard to bear, we just really kind of go down other roads?
Where you can't rationalize the irrational? Probably. You know, I mean, the reality is the internet gives people to do a lot of digging. And if they lock in on a concept, you know, I mean, they're going to dig and they're going to dig and dig and dig and dig until they find something. And then, you know, I mean, I'm going to blow your mind here a little bit and probably have people like losing their shit on me. But the Christopher Vaughn case, which was an Illinois family annihilation case that took place at this point like 20 years ago. It was around the same time that Drew Peterson, the cop killer who had killed his wife, and then his young wife went missing. They never found her. So those two trials are going on at the same time. Christopher Vaughn was married, three kids are on their way down to a water park in St. Louis. Ends up that all three kids are executed in the back of the car. The wife, Kim, has a gunshot from underneath, like your typical kind of suicide, you know, maneuver in terms of using a handgun. And Chris was shot twice. So the prosecution's like, nah, you did it. It was you. It was you. You obviously just staged this whole thing. First, you got the gun under her head. You know, you shot her. You shot yourself. And then you executed your children. And they convicted him on it. And, you know, in that case, it was the same kind of shit. He had like their marriage was on the rocks, at least somewhat. You know, he wasn't having an affair, but he had been going to a strip club. You know, like he had spent like thousands of dollars in a strip club. Turns out, and it wasn't really argued, that before this drug called Topamax had its black box warning, FDA warning on it, Kim was taking it. And there were these profound changes in her personality from taking the medication. And she was like, I think they had given it to her as an antidepressant. And ultimately, she ends up, you know, as just the victim in this thing. And there's been a push in that case. And we think that it's going to kind of revive the conversation in that case. Was it Kimberly who had actually done it? And that Chris wasn't lying, because he always denied. He's like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know what I'm saying? So it's
he had two gunshot, self-inflicted gunshot wounds.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're claiming. They're claiming he shot himself through the hand and then one went into his thigh. So
yeah, that's a low probability.
Yeah. So I mean, like, it's like, I don't know. It's a crazy case, but There's a lot of striking similarities to this case, especially because right after that case took place, the black box warning for homicidal and suicidal ideations was put on that particular script. Yeah. So, you know, I just think it's one of those things where, you know, and the reality of these types of cases is that most of the times when mothers do this to their babies or their children, they end up successfully killing themselves, which in turn means that there is no criminal case.
Right. That's true. That's why we never get this far on so many of these is because, right. Yeah, that's true. That's where you would probably end up in the same sort of place.
And this mental health issue keeps evolving. I was doing the research before we started, and Bob, you being the lawyer, knowing this much more intricately, obviously, you know, but as I was looking up, when did this ability to claim not mentally, you know the words, but basically yeah, not
lack
not,
of criminal responsibility.
Not lack of criminal responsibility, especially in Massachusetts. The product test of it was in 54. The penal code is instituted in 62. And so it's been around since the 1800s when it was instituted as law, you know, yeah. Started in England and everything. But it's evolved over time as our knowledge of what goes on in the brains over time. Because even, again, I'll just tout the Gacy files, you know, and buried by you, just listening to the prosecution's closing and their lack of awareness of the mental health then, even compared to now, from 1980 to now, it's profound what the advancements are. And even, you know, and even if people want to pay attention to what they were calling the Bible, what Mac was calling the Bible, that DSM, it is so far lagging behind, and all the psychs of my team working with it, again, it's just not what they use when pure diagnoses are going on, because it's incomplete. It's not even compatible with what the world is using. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. I mean, we're still in the Stone Ages with this shit, and the reality is that we know so little about the human mind. You know, You can't, like I keep saying, I'm like, you can't throw a CAT scan up. Or imaging of the brain and be like, oh, there's the fucking psychosis. I'm pointing at it. That dark spot right there, that's it. And when we can't see an injury, it becomes very difficult for us to understand it. And the most fucked up thing about this case and all the people who I kind of consider to be mental illness deniers out there and even in our chat and, mm-hmm. you know, but it's the most important organ we have. It's what separates us from the fucking beasts. Like what could be more important than figuring out what the fuck is going on with our minds? Like what takes precedent over that? If you've lived through a loved one who has had Alzheimer's and watched what that has done to that person, mm-hmm. and you still refuse to have a concept of just how powerful our mind is in terms of determining what our quality of life is and how we react to the outside world, then I can't help you. You're living in a fucking fantasy world. You know, it's like to me, that's the most, everybody knows somebody or has a loved one that has gone through Alzheimer's. Think about that. Think about that disease. And it starts to make clear to you, like, wow, yeah, you know, people's entire fucking memories, 80 years wiped away as if they don't know anything happened in those 80 years, including the people they love the most on the planet. They have no idea who they are.
Yeah. I think that's a scary thing for a lot of people is the possibility that our brains can do that sort of thing. And yeah, it's scary, but it's real. And pretending it doesn't exist doesn't help anybody.
Our stupidity is outpacing our knowledge of our brain.
It does. That's going to wrap up for today. We're going to actually go over to Defense Diaries here in about 20, 25 minutes or so. So go check out Defense Diaries. We're going to go and join Bob on their live over there. I want to leave with one of my favorite lines, I think, that I've seen so far about this case. And it's about... It's about Reddington. He may have a Werther's in his pocket, but I know a gangster when I see one. So many women in love with this man on social media. And
I don't know if you guys, I posted the media swarm around him yesterday. I was just filming the swarm.
Yeah.
Because I talked to him, like, I'm not...
Yeah, I saw, yeah.
I saw you. In the middle of trying a case, you know what I mean? Like, no, but I mean, I talked to him in different, like...
Yeah.
Any rate, so, you know, but yesterday that fucking crowd of media that was just like enveloped him whole.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's funny. If you haven't seen it, it's on my Instagram. Check it
out. Yeah. It's great.
I was saying this before we started, no matter the outcome at this point, you're not going to bring back the kids. The tragedy of that, there's no justice for their loss. The victims are standing with their daughter or daughter-in-law or friends. And the attention that's been put on the mental health crisis for women, especially in postpartum, has been made, and hopefully it'll continue to be made. And either way, she's behind bars, whether it's in a psych ward or not. I mean, so he threw it all on the table, no matter the outcome of this, you know. So it's hard to imagine, no matter the outcome, you can have hindsight and say he could have or should have cared more or could have shown it done better. I mean, I've never seen anyone throw it all out there so hard every single day. So, and it has been an education watching him just doing, watching, you know, like when he was doing his direct and it goes short, you're like, why is that such a short direct? Because he was anticipating the cross, and then he's making his points on the redirect. I'm like, holy shit, that was genius. Yeah. What a human being.
Man, like my highlight for him, my favorite, and he's got a lot of great techniques. Like he does that thing where he's always like, you know, where he says something in the affirmative to a witness, like, oh, so when did you do that? Oh, so you called... You know, and then it forces the witness to say something that they didn't do that they should have done. And he'll get at them by saying, oh, so when did you call them? Oh, well, I didn't. Oh, okay. You didn't call that. But my favorite thing was when he read the portion of the opening statement from the Commonwealth to, I can't remember if it was Heilbronner, the sake guy. And, you know, he's like, do you think that that's inaccurate? I think it was Sartov or whatever his name was.
Greg Satov, yeah.
Yeah, Satov. Do you think that was an accurate representation of the case that's in front of you? And he's like, I think it's really minimizing what was going on here. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, that was – but I recognize it because I couldn't hear in the courtroom if he – said that this is coming from their opening, because it's way more powerful if he's not telling the witness it's the opening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that was my favorite moment. Out of many, many red moments that I loved.
Yeah.
I mean, his one-liners and his zings are the best.
Like it was the most tragic education I've been part of in a very long time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like the whole attorney Sprague thing was fucking classic, man.
Defense Diaries, Bob Mata. Go check it out. Press subscribe, and we're going to go over to his live here. Like I said, in about 25 minutes, we'll be talking.
You got the invite. I'm sorry.
You got to send it to me and Robin too. So send us there, and we'll be over there till about one-ish or one central, whatever that is for everybody. Robin, this okay? It's your turn. This is the stage. Here we go. Masterclass.
Yeah, so I got my masterclass out. So it's my class on masterclass. It's become the person that people that everyone trusts. It's out on masterclass, and so if you follow me, you're into understanding human behavior and actually what inspires people to trust you. This is a class for you, high decision making. So basically, everything we do on this show, check it out. It's on masterclass. You can go to my website, check it out. So it's in the description here. So thanks, Tony.
Yep. Link is in the description as well for Robin's masterclass, so go check that out. All right, press subscribe. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. That's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. That's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. That's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just $10.
$10 for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.